And now a topic that should be disturbing. It's sex trafficking. It will not be for all ears. But you would think, you would hope, that if a half-naked young woman with a broken leg crawled out onto a highway to escape her trafficker, and she's finally scooped up from that highway by an Uber driver, only to then try to survive a shootout between her trafficker and the Uber driver, who happened to be armed, you would think that more adults in America should hear about it. Experts say a lot of traffickers are now finding their young victims on social media. We'll get that big picture in a moment. More than 10,000 reported cases in 2020 involving more than 16,000 people, and those are only the cases that were reported. But first to this recent incident in Seattle, Washington. Seattle Times reporter Sarah Jean Green is covering the story. Sarah, so this woman that was on the highway turns out to be a 20-year-old trafficking victim. This chapter, I guess, in a violent life started when her trafficker forced her to strip naked. Tell us what happened.
So this woman was brought up from California with several other women, and their alleged pimp rented an Airbnb in South Seattle where they were all staying, and then he would drive them up to Aurora Avenue North, which is a well-established prostitution track here in Seattle. He had pistol-whipped and beat up one of the women. She wanted to leave, and she was trapped in the Airbnb for 3 days with no money, no cell phone, nowhere to go. After 3 days, he allegedly beat her again and made her strip from out of the clothes that he had purchased for her. So she's in her underwear and tries to leave out the front door. He bars her way and slams her to the ground, and she's able to run up the stairs and jumps out of a third-story window to get away. Hobbles out into the street, waves down a car, is forced into his car with the other women. They're driven up to Aurora. And the other women get out. She's still sitting there, and he's threatening to break all her teeth. And he's got his gun out. And she's able to escape the car and runs into the street and ends up sitting in traffic. And, you know, Aurora's a six-lane highway.
So a couple things. It was two women who tried to rescue her after she jumped out of that window. That's when she broke a leg. Now she's out sitting on the highway when she's picked up by an Uber driver. Then what happens?
So the Uber driver stops and says, hey, you know, hop into the van. And the accused pimp gets in his car and chases after them and starts firing. The Uber driver was also armed and returned fire. You know, several people called 911 when they saw the woman sitting in the street. And then more people called when there's this rolling gunfight. And so the Uber driver manages, you know, to get away and is able to pull over at a gas station and wait for police and state troopers and, you know, medical aid for the woman because she had incredibly severe injuries.
Okay. So they managed to get away. She was hospitalized, surgery for a broken leg and ankle, black eye, cuts all over her body. How is she doing, and who is she? Do we know?
We don't know. As is common in cases involving sex crimes, the victim in this case is identified by her initials.
One hopes that there's a safety net for her, because as we're going to hear, sometimes women involved in sex trafficking against their will get charged.
Well, not in Seattle. In Seattle, we've got a very victim-centered approach. You know, I've been out on stings where they'll have social service providers set up in a trailer. And if they're doing a John sting, they're arresting the Johns. But if the woman wants it, they will take a woman to the, you know, the social service providers and drop her off. You know, there's no criminal charges that are filed against the women.
What about the alleged assailant, 30-year-old Winston Burt? We know he's been charged, but do we know whether he's part of a larger sex trafficking ring?
We don't know that for sure. Oftentimes they work solo. But I mean, he was making a ton of money. We know of at least four women that he had, plus the police said, you know, they believe he was recruiting additional women while here. But each of the women had quotas of $2,000 a day.
Well, how did people in Seattle react to this? You talked about all the calls to 911.
People have written me and been like, wow, I would love to do something for that Uber driver. That Uber driver saved this woman's life. how can we help the 20-year-old? And I've had to tell them, look, you know, I don't even know who she is. But I've referred some readers to the Organization for Prostitution Survivors. People who work in that organization are all survivors of sex trafficking. And they've got various services and programs for women who are trying to escape the life.
Yeah. That's Seattle Times reporter Sarah Jean Green. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Well, now let's bring in Robert Beiser for that big picture. He's director of the Strategic Initiative on Sex Trafficking at Polaris. That's a not-for-profit working to prevent sex and labor trafficking. Robert, you are familiar with this Seattle story. In fact, you used to do your work for Polaris in Seattle?
Yes, it's true. I ran an organization there called Seattle Against Slavery and spent almost 10 years working on the issue of sex and labor trafficking.
Well, you know, to hear you say Seattle Against Slavery, I mean, people might be wincing at that word, but that is what we're talking about, isn't it?
You know, there are a lot of parallels with the loss of freedom that people experience in sex trafficking and situations. Slavery can be a hot button term, especially in the context of the American slave trade or the African-American slave trade. The key thing is someone who doesn't want to be in a situation, and if they try to achieve freedom, violence is what they meet with.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what the history of slavery has been.
But in the story that we just heard, jumping out of a window, you know, breaking a leg, crawling onto a highway, a shootout, how common is that?
I think the particular details of how out in the open the violence was are a bit unique, but for the National Human Trafficking Hotline that Polaris has operated for 15 years, violence is commonplace in the experience of people who are in sex trafficking situations.
Right. Well, you mentioned prostitution. Let's make a distinction, because there's always the argument that there are women who want to be in that trade. But we have to set that aside, because we're talking about someone who's not just captive, but she has her owner's name tattooed on her face. No money, no food.
You're right to say that the distinction between prostitution and trafficking is very blurry, especially when it comes to the violence. But as one survivor leader said it to me, those buyers don't care whether she's trafficked or not. And the traffickers certainly don't care if people think it's prostitution or trafficking. The buyers just want their sex and the traffickers just want their money. And the area of Seattle where this violence was taking place, every day there are hundreds of men going to buy sex from potential trafficking victims, and they don't care what happens to the people that they're buying sex
from. Do they know?
I think they know as much as someone who drinks and gets behind the wheel of a car knows that there's a distinct possibility that they're going to hurt someone on the way home. They hope it doesn't happen, but ultimately they don't really care. As you mentioned, the trafficker had tattooed his nickname on the faces of these victims. The idea that a sex buyer could go into that situation and put that out of his mind, there's a willful ignorance that's happening.
So what isn't being done, what should be done in your view? Polaris has a scorecard. When we look at this report card on what states are doing, we see lots of D's and F's.
So we have this wild situation that's been allowed to occur where someone who's in a trafficking situation, the law says that they've been forced against their will, either through violence or through threats, to do something that they didn't want to do. And yet, across the country, we have tens of thousands of people who have criminal records for being forced into prostitution by someone who's willing to try to kill them. And the life of a survivor who gets out of that situation but still has that criminal record is one where they have challenges getting a place to live, challenges getting a job, and it's all because of something that someone made them do. And so this scorecard really says there are opportunities that states can take and that even cities can take to help people make sure that they're not punished. But the history of this has been, we've arrested and charged minors as young as 10 years old for being involved in prostitution in places where they can't even consent to sex. And that still goes on in some states to this day.
And again, Seattle is one of the cities that doesn't prosecute sex workers who might be trafficked for the work itself. But in the meantime, it might be dangerous. But how can we do anything?
I think the example of what happened in Seattle is a great one. Uber is a great example of companies taking the steps to train their employees on what situations like trafficking might look like and ways that they might need to respond. And this was an incredibly heroic act. But that, for most people, isn't what trafficking is going to look like when it shows up in their life. It will be something where there's a person who is either in crisis or has some specific sets of needs. If someone isn't accepted by their family or doesn't have a community, traffickers target that. And I think the real step that turns into positive support in most trafficking situations that improve is someone to say, I know this person. I'm going to talk to their parents. I'm going to talk to one of their friends. Go to the National Human Trafficking Hotline and look at our referral directory. Call the hotline and say, someone I know or one of my kids' friends seems to be not in a great place.
Robert Beiser, director of the Strategic Initiative on Sex Trafficking at Polaris. That's the not-for-profit that works to prevent sex and labor trafficking. Robert, thanks so much, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.